This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
I mean, there's no way to sum that up. And it not even is a bad play call, just because of the result of the play, but just, you know, I try to pride myself on like a feel of the flow of the game and how things are going. And even if we were able to get that off, and even if we were able to do anything with it, it wasn't the right timing for the play. And, I got to have a better feel and understanding, okay, hey, you know, different D-line in the game, you know, I've had their backup D-line in the game, you know, we looked that we kind of were going to get, and then boom, as soon as I see that, you know, Van Noy, they're switching their D-line, as soon as I see that, I got to get out of the play. Even with all that, poor play call, and ultimately kind of costed us a football game right there, because you had an opportunity right there to cut it to a one score game. We were kind of flowing a little bit, so I got to be better.
And what went wrong for the offensive line yesterday?
I think the biggest thing is probably me, right? I got to do a better job of putting them in position to have success, right? Like I didn't do a good enough job of getting the guys comfortable in a rhythm. And you know, I made it a drop back game for the offensive line, and I thought they handled it well.
You talked a little bit about the trick play there. How much did the way that the game was going, and I know you guys were having some success there when that play happened, but specifically in the first half with the challenging nature of sustaining drives and moving the ball, how much did that play into trying to like just catch them off guard there in that moment?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think that had anything to do with the first half. I thought early in the first half we were staying on schedule on some of the plays, and you know, a couple third and twos that we didn't get, you know, an opportunity to sustain drives that we've been able to kind of cash in, you know, in the last couple weeks. And you know, those were manageable situations that we got to be able to take care of. And I know we had some later in that first half, some third and longs that make life a lot harder, but I don't think any of that played into, you know, the play call right there. The defense did a good job getting us the ball back and getting it to a potential two score game, and us to go down and try to get points. And so I think those are the situations that it's not that I just want it back, but I just got to be better in those situations. And there's no one to blame but myself. Again, not just because of the results of the play. Like there's times where you go to the Jacksonville game, there's times where there was a touchdown that I didn't like the play call. And so I got to continue to improve and get better.
In your conversations with your offensive linemen, Aaron Cromer, et cetera, like during the game, after the game today, what was it about the Baltimore scheme that seemed to have that group kind of unable to come up with answers throughout the game?
I don't think it was, look, they, they played it. They played a good style of football. They played a good football game. I think I have to do a better job at just putting our guys in better positions. I don't think, I think it's always going to be about us and being able to adjust. And, I think it's one of those games that I don't think we had a bad plan. I think, the game was called bad, and, I have issues saying that, but I'm full accountability. Like, I want our guys to know, like, I'm in this with them, and, I got to do a better job and hold to a standard. Right. And, so I don't think it was, I think it was more us and me than it was them.
I don't think you guys had a play go for over 10 yards in that first half. I believe it was only 4 for the game. What went into the struggles in trying to create any sort of big plays on a consistent basis?
Yeah, no, I think, they did a good job, obviously, limiting the explosives. And, you know, we had some of the opportunities, whether it was a protection breakdown or missed opportunity and making a catch. We didn't cash in on those opportunities. And some of the style of defenses that you face in some of those, it's rack situations that allow you to kind of get those opportunities. And just one of those games that I didn't do a good enough job of kind of giving those guys those opportunities.
And finally, one more for me. Kind of lost in the outcome of the game is Khalil Shakir setting the NFL record for most consecutive receptions and targets. What's that kind of say about the player that he is and just the consistency that he brings?
Yeah, I mean, that's we've been saying all along, he's an absolute football player, and you know where he's going to be. You trust him. He's a baller, and nothing's ever too big for him. He's willing to do all the dirty work in the run game, in the pass game. He doesn't care about anything besides winning. And I think he helps us win. And he went out there yesterday and absolutely battled and came back in the game and everything. And so kind of speaks to who he is. And and I know he's not worried about whatever record that might be. He just wanted to find a way to win the football game. And I wish we were able to get that done.
How much was yesterday a reminder that the everybody eats mantra has to work for this offense to succeed based on how you guys played in the first 3 games and then how limited things looked yesterday?
I mean, you hope if everyone's eating, then that means that we're spreading the ball around, we're moving the ball, we're staying on the field, we're sustaining drives. I think that was a big issue yesterday, is us being able to sustain. We had too many third downs and execute in the third downs to be able to sustain the drives. And that's something that we try to pride ourselves on. Not only just being in manageable third downs, but trying to avoid the third downs. And, we didn't do that. We didn't do it a well enough job last night, which makes it a little tough for everybody to eat when you're not converting and sustaining.
I guess, and just to flip that question upon its ear, can this offense succeed without everybody eating, with maybe one player taking over the load? Can this offense succeed in that way?
I mean, the offense, in our mind, it's the whole premise of all of that. I know sometimes it kind of gets, it might be overboard with it, but like, it's more of a mindset of like, hey, it doesn't matter whose play it is or whose game this might be. Like, it could be one game somebody might have 10 targets, and the next game he only has 2. It's more of a mindset, more so than, hey, in order for us to win, everybody has to get this, this, and this, and this. It's more, all we care about is winning. We don't care about anything else. And I think that's more the premise, more so than, hey, am I getting touches? Am I getting targets? It's more just, hey, when the opportunity comes, be ready for it. Obviously we didn't get it done last night. That's basically it.
You've referenced getting everyone involved several times here. 4 games is not exactly a small sample size, but Curtis Samuel has not really gotten involved, and it's easy to overlook when you're winning by 20 or 30. But when you have a game like last night where you're looking for somebody to make a play offensively, 2 catches for 8 yards for him sort of stands out. And you've had Curtis before, he's had success with you before, so what's going on with his usage that you just haven't been able to find a way to have him make some impactful plays?
I think, I'd say Last night, you know, I can say the same with all these questions. It comes down to me. I got to do a better job. I'd say week two and week three, some of that was just a product of not having to do much after the first half. Week two and week three. And so some of the stuff, you know, you're carrying it over. And, Curtis has to play more. Curtis is, you know, I have to find ways to get the ball in his hands. Good things happen. And I know that. And, it's sometimes plays are called for it. And, you know, we have to get out of it. There was a couple looks yesterday. We had to get out of certain looks, you know, they get the ball in his hands or, you can't always dictate exactly how it's going to play. But, you know, good things happen when it is. And so I have to continue to do a better job at that.
You mentioned as part of your answer there that Curtis has to play more. That's something, again, I know the score has maybe dictated it at parts in weeks two and three, but, you know, his usage has not been particularly high, you know, through four games. So maybe what does he have to do or what has to change to get him on the field more?
Nothing. I just have to, you know, you try to go through, you go throughout the game plans and, you know, and you put tags on certain plays and, you know, you can evenly distribute it throughout the game, but sometimes it has to do with what's getting called, you know, and, I have to do a better job throughout the game, just getting him going as it is, but making sure that, hey, knowing the play counts and the snaps and making sure that he's getting enough, because at the end of the day, we're going to need all these guys throughout a season, right? We got a lot of games left and nobody can be playing too many reps right now or else, you know, as the season goes, they're going to wear down. And so I have to be mindful of that. Curtis doesn't have to do anything different right now. I just, I know he, I have a good relationship with him. He trusts him. He trusts me. I trust him. He's just, you know, I just got to get him going and I will.
And lastly for me, Keon talked last night about, you know, having the opportunity in the first half that he wanted back, that he wasn't able to make the play, but then he bounced back with a couple of really nice contested catches in the second half. Is that something, you know, I know there's silver linings were pretty few and far between last night, but was that something that maybe he could build on a little bit?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, anytime he has the opportunity to make the play, we expect him to make it. And, those were two nice plays at the end of the, you know, in the second half, giving us opportunities, you know, but that's the expectation we have for him. So it doesn't come as a surprise. It doesn't come as anything where it's like, hey, there's a lot of coaching to it, you know, there's a lot of coaching to him on those plays, even though ones that he made. And so we have high expectations for him. And, there's a standard that we have for him. And, him going up and making those plays is kind of what we expect.
Hey, Joe, I just wanted to circle back on, I know you talked about, you know, that you thought you should have gone back to the run more. And obviously being down, that's hard. But, like, why didn't you go back to it? Like, was it the matchups? Like, why specifically did you not go back to it at some point? More.
Yeah, I think, you know, you go back to some of the drives, right? Like the first drive, you know, you had some passes in there and you had, you know, you get to a second or two, we end up alerting and getting to a run and don't get it. And then next thing you're off the field. The second drive, you know, we were able to sustain it and kind of get some runs off. And, we had a couple penalties that kind of stopped you from, you know, we had a run that ended up going into a pass. And next thing you know, you're backed up and now you're able to pass it. So I come out the next one, trying to get the run game going, go three straight runs, we go three and out. And so, the next one, three straight passes. It's one of those where it's like never got into a groove and a rhythm. And then, you know, you came in at halftime, you obviously get a 2-minute drill where, you know, you're not going to get enough runs. Then you come in at halftime, you're like, hey guys, it's an opportunity. Let's try to get into a rhythm, be able to run the football a little bit. And we were able to have some of those on those two drives. And then obviously when you call the you know, the reverse and we fumble, next thing you know, you're down by a lot. And, you know, that stopped a lot of whatever momentum we might've had it there. And you'd love to be able to continue, kind of running the rock right there. So it's more of a, I know that's a long winded answer without giving an answer, but, I just have to do a better job of, not that I was ever looking at the scoreboard, but know how many drives you got back and you can still, it doesn't have to be a pass fest. And know how the defense is being played and giving you opportunities to run the ball if you have to.
Are there specific things, like you said, obviously there's like things you want back from last night, but like, what do you take, like what lessons, I guess, do you take from it? Like moving forward, are there specific like larger themes or like things that you can be like, okay, like I can do this differently going into next week, or is it more just like the smaller things?
Yeah. I mean, No, there's things every game, right? There's things came from Jacksonville game that was like, I got to be better. I think that's the mindset we try to have with our guys. Is there's a standard, and we haven't played our best football yet. We have to do that. And I try to pride myself. I'm never going to be perfect, right? Like Josh Allen makes us right. A lot of times our guys make us right. I'm going to trust our guys. But I try to pride myself on seeing how the flow of the game is going, how things are going up front, how the game's being played, and do whatever we got to do to try to make adjustments to score one more point than them. And we didn't do that, and I didn't do that. And so it's not necessarily a reflection. It's stating the obvious that, when I come back, it's I have to be better.
Ravens' pass defense was ranked 31st in the NFL up to this point. Being down, 3 possessions there, how come you were not able to exploit that pass defense? What did they do that made you not exploit the pass defense?
Yeah, I think I don't think numbers mean a thing at this point in the year. I think when they were the number one rush defense and the number 30. Sometimes that just when you only play 3 games, you might, a team like Dallas in the 2-minute drill, they played a little different defenses. They're going to give up pass yards and teams aren't going to run it. And so I don't think they're the 32nd ranked team. Not to say anything should have changed with our standard and kind of how we were able to complete it. But, I think a lot of it was, some of it was just pitch and catch, us, needing to do a better job of just cleaning up some of the details in the pass game. But I wouldn't say that, hey, they're the worst pass defense in the league is, I know their numbers say that, but I think everyone just watching, not necessarily that game, but the games before, would know that that doesn't completely paint the picture.
Right. And we all know that this is a copycat league. And, what was put on display in front of everybody last night, how would you be prepared going forward to make sure that something like that, I can't say that don't happen again, but you'll be a little bit more prepared going forward with it.
Yeah, I mean, you prepare. I prepare every game the same, right? It's, you kind of go through your process and making sure you kind of go through, all the way up through game time about all the, try to sort through all the scenarios. And, I'd be lying to you if I thought that was a scenario the way that was going to play. It played out last night, how it was going to play out. And, I tell the guys all the time, like, if you're changing who you are after a loss, that means you probably weren't, doing it the right way in the first thing. So like, I believe in my process and I believe in, the work ethic of our coaching staff and our players that we'll be able to clean up some of the necessary changes, things that we need to. And teams can copycat whatever they need to. At the end of the day, it starts with us and our execution and our details and less about the team that we're facing.
Coach, if you had one word to describe that trick play afterwards that was going on your mind after the play, what would it be?
I probably couldn't. I probably can't say it on the Zoom.
Hey, Joe, you spoke to your play call in last night's game, just the pride that you take in having a good feel for the game. I'm sure the best medicine is a game coming up again on Sunday where you can get back into it. But how can you use, as an offensive coordinator, how can you use a practice week to get back into that groove and that rhythm and that standard that you talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I think practice is the most important thing that you do. And I understand you have pros, and as the season goes, sometimes you might maybe practice isn't, the guys, the bumps and the bruises, but the reality of it is we haven't had any, there's zero excuses for anything, but we haven't had any normal weeks. And so it's a great opportunity for us. It had nothing to do with why we played like we played, but it's a great opportunity for us to get back to the basics and get out and have a normal week of us getting after it, practicing the details, going through it all over again. I enjoy practice, and I think, when we're flying around and our guys know what we're doing and we're able to practice it, I think, with everything slows down on game day.
But when you include something like that in a game plan, Sean said it's something that you will discuss with him during the week. Within the game, what's the process for wanting to pull the trigger on one of those? Do you talk with Sean or someone else in the coaching staff, maybe between possessions? Is this the right time? Do we feel like we have it, coming up on this possession?
Yeah, look, I think things... Yeah, sometimes you talk through you're in the midst of all the defenses going on. Hey guys, these are my next thoughts. These are kind of things that are going to be, might come up in the next drive. Sometimes it's a, you know, sometimes it's a, hey, just a feel from, I hate to say that, but sometimes it's a feel, you know. There's a couple plays from Jacksonville that I didn't talk about, but as we're kind of going and seeing, you know, seeing how the defense is being played and whatnot, it's like, all right, you know, I think we have an opportunity to hit this. And it just wasn't a smart idea. You know, I have the conversation with coach and, you know, throughout the week and, you know, we obviously have great communication and he understands, you know, it can't be a, hey, right before I'm going to call every play, coach, are you good with this? There's clock running down. And so, you know, it's the communication throughout the week and the trust. And I just have to do a better job of the timing and the place and the call. You know, there's really nothing else with that.
How difficult is that? Because I would imagine when you're calling play to play, you've got a call sheet, you've got a progression, you've got things, you know, what down distance, time, everything you're thinking about, to be able to get outside of that and say, all right, on top of all these things I'm trying to do every down, I got to have a feel for where I am in the game too. How difficult is that? You know, especially for someone like yourself who hasn't done this job for 10 or 15 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult, but that's what I get paid to do. Like this is what I do for a living. And I sit there and I picture the game, you know, to try to go through it. Okay. Hey, if we get the ball and it's a first and 10 in this situation, hey, what am I thinking? And, you know, I think there's so much more to a play caller than just looking at a piece of paper and just reading plays. Like there is a flow and it was poor flow. You know, and there's no excuses. I can, you know, I can give the justification of why it was on the call sheet. But at the end of the day, the timing of it was not when it should have been. And, you know, it was costly.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.